Angel Augustine,
Faith Nogueira,
and we are at William H. Turner Technical Arts High School on February 16, 2006 to interview Kim Sands about her personal history.
Can you tell us when and where you were born and a little bit about your parents and grandparents?
Well, my name is Kim Sands and I'm from Miami, Florida. I was born on Miami Beach in a hospital called St. Francis, which actually is no longer there. And St. Francis, interestingly enough, was a hospital on South Beach that never allowed black people to have children there. And because my daddy was in the war in the 1950s in the Korean War, only the service mothers were able to have children there. So I was actually a kind of rare black case that was born there.
Can you tell us about your parents or grandparents?
As I said, my parents, you know, they're from Coconut Grove. They went to Carver. In fact, back in the day, Carver used to be elementary school, junior high, and high school. And my grandparents are from the Bahamas and other places. And so we kind of have mixed people all in my family history.
You said in Carver, is it... Do they have blacks in there?
You know, Carver used to be all black, all African American kids. Back in the 50s, 60s, it was back in the segregation days. Mm-hmm. That's where my parents graduated from high school.
What do you remember about the days of segregation? Is there a haunting memory of discrimination or separation of the races?
Well, I remember specifically one incident being a little kid, and my mom never drove a car, and she worked in Carl Gables on Miracle Mile in a real fancy ladies' dress shop, and she used to take the bus, two buses over there, and I remember seeing the seats empty in the front, and she would always grab my hand when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, and we would have to go to the back of the bus, and I remember being a little kid, a very inquisitive kid that would say, why are we going past all these empty seats? And it's really heartbreaking to remember something like that not so long ago where black folks weren't allowed to sit in the front. Colored people had to go to the back.
Were you motivated to do anything about it? You know, what was your thinking and thoughts about it?
Well, very interesting question. In that experience and sitting in the colored section at Woolworth and the Gables and seeing the signs, it was really kind of weird, you know. But like I said, I was a little kid. But when I was growing up, I wanted to go to college and play sports. I was a very good basketball player where I ended up being in the Hall of Fame at Edison High School for playing basketball. And in 1973, I saw a white lady play a white man in tennis, and the winner made $100,000. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of money. That's like millions of dollars today. I thought I could do that. Of course, I didn't realize how difficult it was. If I knew what I knew now about tennis, I probably would have quit. One, it was so hot here in Miami to be doing that every single day. But the money inspired me. And then a lot of white kids were going to college on tennis scholarships. Black kids weren't really going to school playing tennis and golf and swimming. They were traditionally white sports. But for some reason, I continued with tennis. And I ended up becoming a professional where I played Wimbledon 7 times. I played the U.S. Open in New York 10 times. I played in Paris, France. I played in China, then Australia. And I'm from the projects of Miami. I went to Edison High School. We never owned a car. And to know that I was able to go to the University of Miami for free. I was on a tennis scholarship. I was one of only 2 or 3 black kids in the country playing tennis at the University of Miami or anywhere in the country, for that matter. I stuck it out. Althea Gibson was a role model. Arthur Ashe was a role model. He would come to the park where I learned how to play tennis and give me private lessons for free. So when I got a full scholarship to the University of Miami, I ended up being the captain of the team over there. I ended up getting my degree in education. There were less than 1% black kids on that campus, which was crazy. To be so small of a few minorities on a campus so filled with other people, it's a journey. And I'm very happy that I was able to enjoy the educational journey of it, the sports journey of it, to be successful. I've been all over the world. I mean, I've been in Sweden where there's so many white people, and they would look at me as if I were foreign, which I was, but just to see a colored person, they would stare. I would go to China, to Hong Kong, and the Chinese people, just as I stared at them, to see a whole race of people that looked like that, or to go to Japan and see the Japanese people and to see how everybody looks at each other so funny. Like, we just don't know each other. As a human race, we don't know each other well enough really to even have hatred or segregation or fear of each other, because we don't even know each other, from my experience traveling the world.
You said that in sports it was a minority, blacks were a minority and mostly white people. And was involved in sports like tennis and swimming.
And golf.
And golf. What were some acts of discrimination you encountered while pursuing your career in sports and going to school in an all-white school mainly?
Well, on the college level, you know, kids can be cruel from elementary through college. It never changes. And I think basically because we just don't know each other well enough, you know, kids might look at your hair funny, or look how you talk. I mean, I never really talk different from anyone. However, people do kind of placate to the fact that you may have a little bit of what you call ghetto sound, or your ways may not be quite the way they are, which is, I don't know what they, you know, I mean, kids just do whatever they do. And obviously, you know, different races and cultures gravitate to what their culture is about. So certain things about me culturally, those kids found different. But in reality, I needed water, I needed food, I needed air, I needed to be clothed just like any other person.
It's interesting when you said, you make it back then, you went to different countries and stuff like that, mm-hmm. You know. Like you said the word money. Can you tell us, like, back then, what it was like, you know, the economy for black folks back then? Can you tell us more about that?
That's a great question. I remember because we lived in government housing, my mom paid like $60 a month. Not that that's not happening today. I met someone the other day at the park that pays $8 a month, and they're actually late all the time. But needless to say, you know, obviously the economy is a lot different today. I mean, you could buy a Snickers bar for 10 cents, or sodas were 10 cents or 20 cents. I mean, everything in life just has evolved. However, you know, my mom never owned a car. She never really made enough money to get anything extra. She had four kids. There was no husband. And times are not far-fetched from now, where black men are just not staying with the females, or females are not staying with the men. So that leaves black women to struggle to raise these kids, to try to have their own lives, pay the bills. It's not far-fetched economically from the past, except just through times and things being much more expensive. I mean, poor people now are living in houses worth $150,000. You know, housing is so expensive to buy a home, where, you know, when I was a little kid, you get a home for $30,000, which was a lot of money back there. And when I left the University of Miami, I wrote a letter to a lawyer that was the lawyer for Muhammad Ali and Leon Spinks. I was a college student. I wanted to play the circuit. I wrote them a letter, and I asked if they would sponsor me. And I said it would probably cost about $30,000, which is like, you know, God has blessed me on so many levels to think that they would have called me back and said, okay. And they did. They called me back, and they called my mom's house and said they would sponsor me, that they wanted to see more African Americans out there playing tennis. And when I was a pro, Venus and Serena were little kids. They used to come watch me play. They were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The dad used to corner me by the locker room and ask me and several other pros, Chrissy Everett, Martina, Tracy Austin. He would corner us and ask us tons of questions about the strokes and how to hit the serve, and how much did it cost, and it was very expensive, and how much were the lessons every day, and actually what would it take, And obviously he stuck it out, and the rest is history. Those girls are worth over $100 million each. Hitting a tennis ball. Who would have thought?
How do you feel that being one of the few Black African-American tennis players and succeeding in such great heights, and that allowed you to inspire other Black African-American students who were raised with fewer opportunities than many white people, many white students?
Well, like I said, you know, Venus and Serena were little kids running through the L.A. Forum. The L.A. Forum is the same place where the Virginia Slims would have the tennis tournament for women, which is the place where Kobe Bryant and the L.A. Lakers play the basketball games. They would just put a net down on the court, put a carpet down. And I vividly remember those girls running through the bleachers, and the umpire would say, "Can somebody stop those kids from running through?" But by being out there, there is no greater lesson or teacher than to have somebody that looks like you who's a success. So in order to achieve, it's not mandatory, but it helps to see somebody who's a scientist, who's Black, to know that Blacks have invented the computers, have been a part of the computer age, to know that we as a race of people have been a part of, you know, the blood transfusion, Charles Drew, to know that we have done so many things in Congress, like Carrie Meek, to know that we are astronauts, you know, to know that we're at Stanford University, that we're at Harvard, it matters. To hear us and to see us, it matters. And that's my humble opinion. I mean, it matters to see all races do their thing, but when we don't see people that look like us achieving, doing great things, doing wonderful things in plumbing and science and culinary, it matters.
Let me go back. You said something about ladies living without her husband. So you're saying you didn't live with your father?
That's correct.
So what was it like, you know, living without a father and being segregation back then and not living with your father? What was it like?
It's no different than today not having your daddy, except that, you know, times were so hard back in the 60s and 50s, particularly for Black men. And it's really such a great question, and I really don't know the answer, except that I wish my dad had had a lot more confidence in life, where he didn't feel the need to leave and do the Chicken George type of thing from Roots, where people separated us. They separated us. And people don't realize that it is very difficult generationally to forget how people did that. They sold us. They put children in different families. They put moms and fathers. And the ghost of the past sometimes still lingers. And I really do believe that. And I think my daddy has a very, I think he's remorse about the road that he took, the path. But the path that so many of our ancestors have taken over 300-400 years is frightful. And it hurts. And it's not over yet. And it's not necessarily so that the other races haven't had crazy journeys like the Holocaust, you know, like in biblical times when people were slaves, you know. It hurts. And I don't think the ghost of the past really leaves until people start really learning about each other through education and listening and being truthful about times that nobody talks about. And before Egypt was Egypt, you know, the Greeks named Egypt, not the Africans. It's Northern Africa. There were races of people in Africa that we probably have never even heard of, called like the Kemetians, the Nubians. These were successful people that we don't know nothing about, and we go to school, we go to educational schools for years and never have heard of the Kemetians. It's virtually impossible for anybody really to really join forces as a human race if we really don't just share the truths. The truths are so important.
What do you remember about local or national efforts to bring the full civil rights to Black Americans?
Can you repeat that question, please?
What do you remember about local or national efforts to bring full civil rights to black Americans?
Well, I was a little kid in the 60s. I'm not that old. And I remember, you know, reading about Malcolm X and Dr. King and Coretta King and Athlete Range and all these people who were fighting for civil rights and trying to get people where we would have, you know, new books instead of always hand-me-down books from the white schools, people who fought for better teachers, people who fought for, you know, where we can sit at the counters and be proud of ourselves and not have to go to colored-only restrooms. I mean, I remember it so well, unfortunately. And then people want to know why black folks are always frowning or still so angry. And it wasn't that long ago. You know, I was a little kid, and to know that my parents were subjected to such violence and hatred just on the color of their skin and not given the opportunity really to go to school, you know, like they should have been, and to see how educated prone we are, it hurts.
Just want to ask you the question, like, do you remember going to Virginia Key Beach, you know, where did your family go swimming?
Exactly. Of course, I'm from Coconut Grove. Virginia Key Beach is 12 minutes from my house in the Grove. And I remember having to go to the beach. And I remember my mom, my parents are only 20 years older than me. They're young people, and I remember them going to the beach, and I remember them going to that beach, and I remember the signs, you know, and we had a great time, you know, because the cultural, you know, segregation on a lot of levels brought the races a little bit closer together as opposed to kind of now. I mean, I'd rather it now than before, but if we could take the good that the past had and amalgamate it and put it together, I think we probably do better in 2010, in the 21st century, because there were some interesting things that where people cared a little bit more about each other. Like if you go to a black school as opposed to a mixed race school or a white school, you know, you just tend to have a little bit more camaraderie. You have more of a cultural togetherness, even though there's racism within the black race that is just still so, it's hard to fathom that we constantly hurt each other so bad. But, you know, I think that's a human problem, not so much a color people or a race or a black person. You know, people kill people. People just hurt people. But to know that Virginia Key Beach was there, that there was a place where we can go and frolic in the ocean and meet little boyfriends and little girlfriends and go and have corn dogs and stuff like that. It was better than nothing, I guess.
You said signs. What are some of the signs? Can you tell us?
What's the question?
You said signs.
Like science.
Signs.
In the science.
In Virginia Key Beach. Like, when you go there, you see some of the signs. Can you tell us what are the signs?
Well, whites only, colors only. Basically, those were the main ones. I mean, that said it all.
I know the scene has been kind of short, but is there any final thought you would like to leave us with about your life or anything you want to share?
Well, you know, I think I've pretty much said a lot in a short span of time because it's been such an incredible journey to come from low-cost housing, a little black girl, to be in Australia and China and Overtown, all over the world, and to get my education was so invaluable. It wasn't just valuable, it was invaluable. And to come to a school like this and to see you guys, and I'm being very honest, and it's just my opinion. I've done these type of speaking engagements, as you see, I'm very comfortable, often, all over the country. But to come to a school like this and to see you guys look so interested and so good and youthful and healthy, and it really, it surprised me. I'm very surprised. I'm very happily surprised to see what the future has for us. And it's going to take you guys to really understand how to value education, how to value your independence, how to not bring children in the world when you're not absolutely ready. You cannot, it's imperative that you guys understand that, you know, it's hard enough for you as an individual to bring children in when you know you're not ready and economically stable. It is very important. And on a final note, without manners, we're nothing. I don't care how beautiful you are. I don't care how beautiful you are, you're still ugly. I don't care how much education you think you are, have, or how smart you think you are. You're still dumb without manners. You're dumb. I don't care how wealthy, how much money you got flowing out of your pockets. You're poor without manners and knowing how to treat other people. And it matters.
Thank you.